The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back, everyone. So if you're anything like me, maybe you've watched a few too many true crime shows, you know, the ones with the almost psychic profiler. Well, today we're diving into something that gives you a much clearer picture. We're looking at David Cantor's forensic psychology. A very short introduction. It's like getting backstage access to the real science.
That's a great way to put it. Yeah, our mission today is really to cut through all that Hollywood hype. We hear terms like profiling or eyewitness testimony all the time.
Right.
But often through a really distorted lens. Cantor shows us how psychology can be applied scientifically, you know, rigorously to understand crime and the whole legal process around it.
And it really matters, doesn't it? Because knowing the actual data-driven science and also, frankly, how fragile some methods are, like relying on memory, that's just critical thinking 101. This isn't about gut feelings.
Not at all. It's about stats, models, evidence. And the book's core idea, I think, is it completely reframes the field. It's not some dramatic last resort tool for big cases. It's presented as this comprehensive evidence-based science that's relevant right from the crime scene, through the courts, and even into prisons.
Okay, so let's talk about the person behind this approach. David Cantor. He's not just writing about the field. He pretty much pioneered modern investigative psychology, at least in the UK.
Yeah, David Cantor. He's an emeritus professor and widely known as the father of investigative psychology.
Oh.
What gives him so much credibility is that he didn't just stay in academia.
Right.
He actually bridged that gap between theory and really high-stakes police work. He helped establish the field on solid empirical ground.
And there's a specific case that really cemented his reputation, isn't there? That railway rapist case back in the 80s, John Duffy.
Absolutely. That was huge.
Yeah.
Scotland Yard was, well, they were stumped by this string of brutal attacks near railways. They brought Cantor in.
Yeah.
And he applied his developing ideas, behavioral analysis, geographical profiling. The results were honestly pretty staggering for the time. His analysis gave them concrete leads.
Wow.
Pointing police to the specific area where Duffy lived.
That must have seemed almost like magic back then.
Yeah.
You know, an academic using data, maps, cracking a case that had baffled experienced detectives.
Exactly. It showed everyone that this psychological approach could provide real, verifiable intelligence, not just, you know, educated guesses.
So his authority comes from proving that systematic analysis, that data, could actually outperform intuition.
That's the crux of it. Okay, so let's zoom out a bit and look at the book itself. Cantor's main point is pretty straightforward. Forensic psychology is a serious scientific field.
Uh-huh.
And his job is basically to dismantle that myth of the lone genius profiler we always see.
Right, the one who just knows.
Yeah, he kind of strips away the drama and puts statistics in its place. And he introduces this major shift in thinking right away, moving from what he calls top-down profiling.
Which is the TV version, right? Making big assumptions based on stereotypes?
Pretty much. Often based on shaky ideas.
Hmm.
He argues for a bottom-up, data-driven approach instead.
Okay, bottom-up. What does that actually look like?
Well, think of the crime scene actions, what the offender did, as like a behavioral text message.
Okay.
You don't just guess who sent it. You systematically analyze the message, compare the patterns statistically against thousands of solved cases.
Ah, so you're looking for actual connections.
Exactly. Consistent, statistically valid patterns that tell you something about the offender's characteristics, maybe even where they live.
So instead of saying, oh, this crime was messy, so the killer's probably disorganized.
Right.
Cantor's approach asks, okay, among offenders who showed this specific kind of messiness, what percentage lived within, say, 5 miles? What other characteristics did they tend to share?
That's precisely the difference. And the guiding principle for this is what he calls the AAC equation. Actions infer characteristics. It's about understanding people and their actions through evidence, not just chasing some vague idea of a monster.
And this applies across the whole justice system. Where do forensic psychologists actually fit in?
Everywhere, really. Cantor shows their role, starts right at the investigation, that's investigative psychology.
Huh.
Then to the courtroom, think expert witnesses, assessing competency, the reliability of eyewitnesses.
Mm-hmm.
And then, crucially, into the correctional system, too. Risk assessment, rehabilitation. It covers the whole journey.
Okay, let's maybe break down those areas. Starting with the courtroom stuff, he makes some important distinctions there, right?
Yeah, he clarifies three main roles. First, there's psychology and law. This is more the clinical side.
Like a phrecologist testifying about trauma or if someone's fit for trial.
Exactly. They're providing a clinical service within the existing legal system. Then there's psychology of law.
Okay, what's that?
That's more about studying the legal process itself. Like, how do juries make decisions?
Mm-hmm.
How effective are certain courtroom procedures? It's research on the system.
Got it. And the third one is his baby, investigative psychology, which focuses on the criminal behavior itself.
Right. But staying in the courtroom for a second, the part about eyewitness testimony. Wow. That was sobering. Why is it so unreliable?
Yeah, it's kind of terrifying, isn't it? Cantor draws a lot on researchers like Elizabeth Loftus. Basically, memory isn't like hitting record on a video camera. It's more like rebuilding a story every time you recall it. And it's incredibly vulnerable to suggestion, to things you hear after the event.
So someone could genuinely believe they saw something, feel totally confident.
And be completely wrong. The implications for wrongful convictions are huge.
Yeah. And what about things like polygraphs, lie detectors?
Deep skepticism there, too. Cantor points out they just measure physiological arousal, like heart rate, sweating.
Yeah.
But they can't tell you why someone's aroused. Are they lying? Or are they just, you know, terrified of being hooked up to a machine and accused of something?
Right, could be anything.
Because it doesn't measure deception itself, the potential for false positives or negatives is just too high for real scientific rigor.
So, okay, the courtroom has its frailties. How does Cantor's science try to bring more stability right from the start at the crime scene using that A to C idea?
Right, that's where investigative psychology comes in. It's all about building knowledge slowly, piece by piece, from the data from that behavioral text. He even developed a framework, the five-factor model, looking at things like interpersonal coherence.
Interpersonal coherence. Does that mean how the offender acts towards the victim sort of mirrors how they act in their normal life?
Exactly. If someone is, say, oddly polite during a horrific crime or incredibly controlling, chances are those traits show up in their everyday relationships too.
So the crime isn't just some random outburst. It's an expression of who they already are.
Precisely. And that links to another factor, the significance of time and place, which leads us straight into geographical profiling.
This is the map stuff, yeah. The circle theory, the idea that where you commit crime says something about you.
Totally. Cantor's research found that most serial offenders don't just strike randomly anywhere. They operate within a kind of mental map, their comfort zone.
Okay.
If you plot their crimes, statistically, they're most likely to live somewhere near the center of that cluster of points inside that circle.
And he distinguished between different types.
Yeah, marauders who basically commit crimes outward from their home base, like hunting in their own backyard.
Mm-hmm.
And commuters who actually travel a distance away from home to offend in a specific separate area.
That's incredibly useful for police, right? He narrows down the search area massively.
Hugely. And the John Duffy case, the railway rapist, that was the big proof of concept.
Right. That's where it all came together. Cantor's profile wasn't vague stuff like he's a loner. It was specific.
What did it say?
Based on the data and the geography, he predicted Duffy would likely be a semi-skilled worker, probably had a rocky marriage, and crucially, lived in a very specific part of North London pinpointed by the crime locations.
Wow, and he did.
He did. It basically showed that this data-driven, geographical approach could turn a baffling case into something solvable. Math over mystery.
Okay, but Cantor argues the work doesn't stop at the conviction. What about applying this science after the trial in the correctional system?
Yeah, this is vital for things like parole decisions or managing people in prison.
Yeah.
We need to know the risk of reoffending. Cantor really pushes for actuarial risk assessment.
Actuarial, like insurance tables, mm-hmm. using stats.
Kind of, yeah. Instead of just relying on one psychologist's gut feeling, which is called clinical judgment, actuarial assessment uses statistical data.
So you look at measurable factors like past crimes, age, stability.
Exactly. Known risk factors that have been statistically validated across many cases to predict the probability of future offending. It's trying to make risk assessment more objective, more scientific.
That feels like a big step away from just locking people up and throwing away the key.
It is. And it also informs rehabilitation. If the A to C idea holds that criminal actions come from psychological processes, then maybe those processes can be changed.
Through therapy.
Yeah, through evidence-based programs like cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT. It shifts the conversation towards understanding and maybe even changing behavior, not just punishment.
Okay, so if we had to boil this all down, what are the main sort of takeaways, the big messages from Cantor's approach?
Well, number one for me is scientific rigor over intuition. The real value here is in the systematic analysis, the statistics, the testing of theories against data, not just dramatic insights.
Right. It's a science, not an art.
Exactly. And second, flowing from that, is that criminal actions are meaningful behavior. The crime scene isn't just chaos, it's full of information. How an offender acts tells you something real about their internal world.
It's a text to be read carefully.
Mm-hmm. And third, that spatial piece. The environment tells a story. Where crimes happen isn't random. It reflects the offender's mental map, their routines, their comfort zones. That totally changed how police could approach searches.
It really makes you think. And the book has some phrases, some core ideas that really capture this scientific, almost humanistic view.
Yeah, like this one. The central task of investigative psychology is to establish the scientifically validated connections between an offender's actions at the crime scene and their personal characteristics. Hmm. It is about moving from what they did to who they are.
That's the A to C equation right there, isn't it? Building that bridge from action to identity, but using data bricks.
Perfectly put. Hmm. And then there's this idea, which kind of humanizes without excusing. Criminals are not a separate species. Their behavior, however abhorrent, emerges from the same psychological processes of thought, emotion, and interaction that shape us all.
That's so important for analysis, right? If you just think of them as monsters, you can't apply scientific principles. You need to see the distorted human processes at work.
Exactly. You need psychology, not mythology. And one more, on the geography. Where a person commits their crimes tells us as much about them as how they commit them. The geography of their offenses is a direct reflection of their mental map.
That's the circle theory in a nutshell. Just pow! The idea that map coordinates are part of a psychological profile is still pretty mind-blowing.
So how can we, you know, the listeners, actually use this knowledge? What are the real-world applications?
Well, first off, informed citizenship. Like, if you ever end up on a jury, understanding how shaky eyewitness memory can be, how susceptible to suggestion it is, that gives you a vital critical filter. You realize a witness saying, I'm 100% sure, doesn't automatically mean they're accurate.
That's a big one. And for professionals, people in law, social work, policing the book highlights better techniques, like the cognitive interview.
What's that?
It's a specific way of interviewing witnesses designed to help them recall more accurately without planting suggestions. It respects how memory actually works.
Okay, that makes sense.
And then there's the policy angle. If the science suggests actuarial risk assessment is more reliable than gut feelings for predicting reoffending, and that evidence-based rehab like CBT can actually work, well, then our public conversations about crime need to incorporate that evidence, right? Move beyond just being tough on crime emotionally towards what's actually effective statistically.
So wrapping up, final thoughts. What's the biggest thing you took away? For me, honestly, it's the geographical profiling.
Yeah.
Yeah, that idea that where someone offends is a direct psychological signature you can measure and analyze. It just feels like such a clear win for science over guesswork. Replacing intuition with math and data in such a dramatic way. That was my aha moment.
That's a great one. For me, I think it's the broader point that forensic psychology's real contribution isn't necessarily about giving definitive, easy answers.
Mm-hmm.
It's about providing these rigorous scientific frameworks for understanding really complex human behavior, asking better questions, basically, and realizing the reality, the actual science rooted in data and theory is just so much more intricate and, frankly, more interesting than the simplified fiction we usually get.
Absolutely. And for listeners who found this fascinating and want to know more, Cantor's work really opens doors to exploring specialized areas like the psychology of arson or how these psychological programs are actually implemented inside prisons. Lots more to dig into.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.